You're listening to a Sunday service podcast from First Universalist Church of Minneapolis, a faith community that welcomes, affirms, and protects the light in each human heart, listens deeply to where love is calling us next, and with humility, courage, and compassion works to create a more just world. To learn more, visit us at firstuniversalistchurch.org.
Good morning. I said good morning. Thank you. Please rise in body or spirit and join me in singing our opening hymn, Love Will Guide Us.
Good morning. Right, sing. Good morning. It's so good to be here together this morning. It's so good to see each and every one of you here in the sanctuary and to welcome those of you who are joining us online or later in the week. It is good to be together. My name is Jen Crow, and my pronouns are she, her, and I am one of the ministers here at First Universalist. It's a joy to be leading worship today with Reverend Ashley, with Amy and Paolo, with John and Olu, with Lynn, and with everyone who helped to create this space, to prepare this time and place for us, that it might be a place of renewal and inspiration together. A couple of important announcements for us today. One is there is cake. If you are here in the building after the service, there will be cake downstairs in the social hall. And it's not just cake for no apparent reason. It's cake because we are celebrating those of you who have been able to return your pledge cards to let us know about your financial gift to the church in the year ahead, supporting our ministry together from July 1 to June 30th. So we invite you. This was supposed to be kind of a closing of the pledge drive, but as Ashley will tell us later, it's kind of a renewal. Let's go. Let's do it. Let's have some cake. Some of you may have seen that we will be having family theater games together here at church. I want to let you know that will not be happening after all this week. It's postponed, but it will come back around again. We are excited that choir will be starting this week. So first choir rehearsal. Thursday evening. Paolo is your fearless leader. So please check in with Paolo. You can email, you can go talk to him. You can show up Thursday night at 7 right here. It's going to be a blast. So we're excited about that. Also, if you are new or newish to this congregation and you want to learn more, please join us up front after the service for a place to start. Just an informal conversation about the church and you. In this congregation, we lean into the universalist spirit of love and hope And we practice this love and hope by being in the ever-present exchange of giving and receiving and growing together. As we gather today in particular, we are sending our universalist love and hope to our Muslim siblings who are in the midst of the holy month of Ramadan. Ramadan is 30 days of intentional spiritual practice, celebrating the time that the Prophet Muhammad first received a revelation of the Quran in the cave of Hira. 30 days of individual and collective fasting and prayer, meditation, study, reflection, acts of kindness. This time of shared spiritual practice that is happening in local communities here, in private homes, and all over the world. It happens every year in the midst of joy, in the midst of tremendous suffering, as it is right now for those living in Gaza. A Muslim colleague of mine spoke once about Ramadan being a spiritual oasis in the year, a cave of respite to return to and be renewed, even in times of great suffering. As we gather today, we too come with hopes of renewal, of peace, of spiritual oasis, that we might listen for and practice together what it means to live with love and hope at our center, wherever we are in the cycle of life's turning. So this morning, we say to our Muslim siblings, Ramadan Mubarak, blessed Ramadan. And we give thanks for this space and place where we can know ourselves as beloved exactly as we are, and where we can work to find the inspiration and practices to transform ourselves and our world toward greater love and justice. Arriving here together, we take a moment to settle in with some shared breath together. So I invite you, however it is for you, I always feel my feet on the floor, take a moment to shake it out. And then I invite us into a practice together, wherever you are, of three shared breaths. And from this place of connection, we turn to our covenant. And I invite you to say together with me as we light our chalice, love is the spirit of this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another.
So we want to spend some time in community, in music, and in our bodies. And so we're going to sing Building Bridges. We've done this before. It's got a rhythmic component. And then eventually we challenge ourselves with a round. Glenn Thomas is not here to guide us this morning.
or
so
to catch our mistakes.
So we're embracing imperfection. But the rhythm starts like this. Please sing along if you know it. Building bridges between our divisions, I reach out to you. Will you reach out to me with all of our voices and all of our visions? Sisters, we can make such sweet harmony. Do I need to teach it? Do you all know it?
Let's go one by one.
Yeah. Repeat after me, please. Building bridges between our divisions.
Building bridges between our divisions.
I reach out to you, will you reach out to me?
I reach out to you, will you reach out to me?
With all of our voices and all of our visions.
With all of our voices and all of our visions.
Sisters, we can make such sweet harmony.
Building bridges between our divisions. I reach out to you. Will you reach out to
all
me?
Of our voices
with all of our voices and all of our visions.
Sisters, sweet harmony. Building bridges between our divisions, I reach out to you. Will you reach out to me with all of our voices and all of our visions? Sisters, we can make such sweet harmony.
Oh, you sound so good. Okay. And now we're ready for a round. So all of the folks from the middle to the north who sing with me, and all of you folks from the middle to the south will sing with Paolo. Are you ready? If you mess up, just like pick it up where we can keep going, like in life. One, two, here we go. Building bridges between our divisions.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks. My name is Ashley. I use she, her pronouns, and I am also one of the ministers here among you. And in case you didn't get enough of a practice of humility with that last song there, all the clapping, whew, I got another one for you. So I grew up singing our first hymn, That Love Will Guide Us One. It's one of my absolute favorites. I can still picture the folding aluminum chairs we had instead of pews, in the big cinder block warehouse we called a church building. It was the 1980s, and we were a bunch of queers and their kids, not the most likely church crew, in not the most likely church building, about a mile from here. This was a crowd that had a lot of trauma around church. Lots of people have been told that we were loved, so we needed to confess and repent our sins, aka our queerness. As a kid with two moms in that era, I developed a keen eye for the safe people who I could tell my family about. My gaydar was on point. It was a survival skill. But this place, this church, was the one place I didn't have to worry about it. My family was unquestionably loved, not despite anything, not when we confessed anything, but as we were, in all our divine queerness. This was also where I learned a practice called acknowledging our humanness. We did it every week. Instead of confession, a word that it would have made most of the adults in that room jump out of their skin, we did this practice of humility together. The content changed each week, but the underlying theme was the same. A gentle call to acknowledge the messy reality of being human. How we mess up. How we hurt each other. How we are complicit in the world's aches and oppression. It's no coincidence that it was in this place where I experienced absolutely affirming love that I also learned to acknowledge my humanness. They rely on each other. In order to let our guard down and recognize our mistakes, we have to be able to trust that we will be met with an unconditional love that will both strengthen and soften us. So for the first movement of our prayer time, so to speak, I'm going to invite you to take the risk to acknowledge your humanness now. In silence, just sit in this space where we know each of you is innately beloved, and let your mind and body scroll back through your week. When did you mess up? When did your actions cause harm, whether or not you intended that? Sit in the silence with that discomfort and breathe into it. And now, release it with an exhale. You don't have to solve anything now. Just know that love holds you, strengthens you, softens you, blesses you always. And let us say our refrain together now. You are not alone. We are holding it together. What other pains need holding now? What other praises might grow our collective joy if you speak them into this space or if you write them into the chat? And we will respond with, you are not alone. We are holding it together. For those transforming real prison bars into art and music, You are not alone. We are holding it together. For those slammed with tornadoes, you are not alone. We are holding it together. From M. Odin and Truman online, for a very young, precious life lost to illness. You are not alone. We are holding it together. For the people of Gaza, you are not alone. We are holding it together. For the people of Israel, you are not alone. We are holding it together. For the people of Ukraine, you are not alone. We are holding it together. For your wife undergoing surgery for an unknown cancer, you are not alone. We are holding it together. Say it one more time. For all those crossing the Darien Gap, you are not alone. We are holding it together. For all the newcomers who are depending on our public school teachers, you are not alone. We are holding it together. And for all our public school teachers, you are not alone. We are holding it together. For all the teachers who are facing layoffs from Minneapolis Public Schools, you are not alone. We are holding it together. For the people of Palestine, you are not alone. We are holding it together. Let us sing now, Spirit of Life, and take all of the prayers of this time that rest silently on our hearts and those we spoke aloud, and hold them together in prayer. Now is the time when we practice giving and receiving in very concrete ways. And if you haven't caught wind yet, tis stewardship season around here, which means it's the season when we make our commitments that allow us to build the budget that we need to bring a little more justice and joy into the world. Even if you are in a giver who gives automatically, for which we are infinitely grateful, we need you to let us know with your packet what your giving will be for this year. We have a rollicking total of 77 pledges received so far, or about $315,000. We expect about 500 pledges. So y'all like a big finish is what we've decided. And we would encourage you to let us enjoy that big finish sooner rather than later so that we may budget appropriately and celebrate. Maybe there'll be more cake when we actually finish. I'm going to say that out loud. There'll be more cake. If you have yet to fill out a pledge card, you can grab one right out in the narthex. You can also get a full packet with all of the information. And if you are a person who is feeling stuck in any way around this, we are here to listen. We are here to talk. We are here to help you develop your practice of giving at every level of giving. We have a special guest this morning to share about her practice of giving, and that is Lynn Broaddus.
Thank you, Ashley. Good morning. I'm Lynn Broaddus, and I use she, her pronouns. I'm a 30-year Unitarian Universalist and a grateful member of this church. I'm here to share my giving story. And I will say that this morning, at first service, there's only 71 pledges. So we're up a few. And one of those, I think, is mine, because I had not realized that the deadline was right now. So anyway, got that taken care of. So it wasn't love at first sight, but I knew love would come if I let it. What I remember about the first service I attended in this sanctuary nearly 7 years ago is not the ministers, not the music, not the setting, not this beautiful, not the beautiful setting, not the message. What I remember was my tears. And unlike a testimonial that we heard from someone else a few weeks ago, mine were not tears of joy or relief. I was in mourning. All I could think about was the Wisconsin UU church I'd left, where my spouse Mark and I had raised our two sons, where I had forged a tight-knit circle of friends after being uprooted from yet another UU church in Wilmington, Delaware. I was crying for what it meant to be an outsider. Here in this sanctuary, I saw pews of people who were raising their children together, people who had helped one another through difficult times, who had journeyed through an evolving sense of what it means to live our UU values, journeys I had taken, but in other churches, with other people. Here, I was a stranger, peering in from the outside. The pain was deep. Initially, I didn't have the energy or, quite frankly, the inclination to throw myself in. I needed time. But slowly, by attending a presentation here and there, joining a class that fit my peripatetic schedule, providing a meal to someone in need, gradually, I started to connect beyond Sunday mornings. And ironically, the pandemic was a catalyst for me. I was at home instead of on airplanes at faraway meetings. My calendar had more vacant spaces than a church parking lot on Monday morning. And then I got a request from our ministers, an invitation, really. Would I be willing to call a list of church members to check on them, see how they were doing and what they needed, to simply provide a friendly voice during the most isolating of times? Yeah, I could make phone calls. And it wasn't the task that was the turning point. It was being asked, personally asked, to help. I had value, and I belonged. It was only 4 years ago, but it seems like a whole other era. Between monthly all-church dinners, adult RE classes, interest groups, and even a new choir, there are so many ways that we are connecting with each other and with the larger community. We've been through a lot in those years, but I've been through challenges at other UU churches, and though I didn't know exactly where the path would lead us, I had absolute confidence that we'd come out stronger on the other side. And then it happened. Being here with so many of you for our mid-year meeting, unscripted, one by one, you came up to the microphone with heartfelt confessions of devotion to and support of this church. I get tingly just thinking about it. We had survived. We hadn't just survived. We were alive, I mean, really alive in this congregation. And like many others, at that meeting, Mark and I pledged an additional gift to help close this year's gap. In our case, a 40% increase over this year's pledge. And we're pledging at that increased level for the coming year as well. Years ago, our Delaware minister, or my first UU minister, the Reverend Bob Doss, now deceased, implored his congregants to give until it feels good. And never have I felt more genuinely. I know that we are in this together. We are holding our church together. Said differently, we are together holding our church. And so I ask you in joining me in giving what feels good. Really good. Feeling good means it doesn't hurt. It doesn't make you feel resentful. But it also means not holding back. So I hope you will take a leap of faith with me. And let's see where we land together. Thank you.
In just a moment, we will pass the baskets around, and we will also have codes up on the wall for those of you who'd like to use the interwebs. But I want to remind you also that this is a time when we practice receiving, which is, for many of us, one of the harder directions of care. And I remind you that this community has a well of support if this is a time you need to practice receiving financially. And I invite you to speak to me or Jen or any of the staff to find us after the service or to track us down via email. And we will make those connections for you. Let us receive our morning offering.
This morning we thought you'd do the offertory music. And we want to invite you all to think of this as a practice of making community together. So we'll start really simply and really united. And you get to pick your own note. You cannot choose wrongly. Choose what feels good in your body. Yes, like that. It all works, right? So you'll start with a simple note, and then you can get more expressive and make it as complex as you want as the song goes along. Take your cue from what Paolo is doing on the piano. I'll provide a little bit more instruction as we do it in case this isn't very clear. But for now, just choose a note that feels good to you and sing it on a hmm, or an ooh, an ah, a syllable that feels good in your body. Here we go.
Thank you.
We've got two readings this morning. Thank you, Amy and Paolo. Thank you, everyone, for creating that together. Our first reading, Lynn's going to offer us.
This first reading is titled, If Bell Hooks Wrote 1 Corinthians. And it's by Tess Baumgartner, Baumberger. And you'll certainly recognize the rhythm of this. Love is caring, affectionate, and loyal. It recognizes, knows, and respects the other. Love is committed and trusting. Love takes the risk of loving. Love is never hurtful, abusive, or neglectful. It does not coerce or dominate. Neither does it spoil or overindulge. Love is ethical, accountable, and responsible. Love does not lie or avoid conflict or to manipulate. Love does not lie to trick or deceive. Love is open and honest, but with a positive slant. Love lies with integrity that wills cooperation. Though it is satisfying to love, love is not about getting one's needs met, nor solely about meeting others' needs. True love is made of mutuality. Love is a generous giver, and in giving it learns to receive. Love places another's interest on the same footing as its own. Love is not so much a feeling as an action, a continuing active choice to nurture another's well-being. There can be no love without justice and equality. Therefore, love requires that we subvert patriarchy, white supremacy, consumerism, ableism, anti-queerness, and all other forms of oppression.
Our second reading comes from the poet Aurora Levins Morales. She is a writer and an artist, a historian, a teacher, a mentor, a healer, a farmer, a revolutionary. She describes herself as a Puerto Rican elder who lives with chronic illness and disability. And she wrote this poem after the events of October 7th, 2023. It's called Summons. Last night I dreamed 10,000 grandmothers from the 1,200 corners of the earth walked out into the gap, one breath deep, between the bullet and the flesh, between the bomb and the family. They told me we cannot wait for governments. There are no peacekeepers boarding planes. There are no leaders who dare to say every life is precious, so it will have to be us. They said we will cup our hands around each heart. We will sing the earth's song, the song of water, a song so beautiful that vengeance will turn to weeping, the mourners will embrace, and grief replace every impulse toward harm. 10,000 is not enough, they said. So we have sent this dream, like a flock of doves, into the sleep of the world. Wake up. Put on your shoes. You who are reading this, I am bringing bandages and a bag of scented guavas from my trees. I think I remember the tune. Meet me at the corner. Let's go.
People leave you halfway through the wood. others may deceive you. You decide what's good. You decide alone. But no one is alone.
People make mistakes. Fathers, mothers, people make mistakes. Holding to their own, thinking they're alone. Honor their mistakes, everybody makes one another's terrible mistakes. Witches can be right, giants can be good. You decide what's right, you decide what's good. Just remember, someone is on your side. Someone else is not. While you're seeing your side, maybe you forgot they are not alone. No one is alone. To see the light now, just don't let it go. Things can turn out right now. We can make it so. Someone is on your side. No.
Oftentimes it's the music for me that gets me right into my heart place, as much as I love beautifully crafted words. It's the music that drops me right in, so thank you. Thank you. It was a couple of weeks ago I found myself sitting in the chairs at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Columbia, Maryland for my dad's memorial service. And I was so grateful that he had found a community, somewhere where he was known and loved and fully engaged in life, and then fully engaged with support and care as he met his final days too, and so was our family. A couple of weeks before that, you all here, many of you had been part of a ritual of blessing stones for me. And I want you to know that Jim Poulter, who's our facilities and operations guy here, brought that box of stones to Columbia, Maryland, and came to support our family and to make sure you all were with me, and he was with me, and our family too. So I did not feel alone in that moment, and I hope that there's something from today's time together that you are able to carry with you as well. Maybe it's a piece of music, maybe it's trying to make that rhythm, maybe it's a phrase or something that holds with you throughout the week and throughout the days so that you can remember too that we are in this together. In this time, in this moment, in each of our lives, in our country, in our larger world, I believe that our communities, our Unitarian Universalist congregations, all of our communities where we are trying to live out our values in the world are essential. We need one another. It's just four short, long years ago that we began the COVID lockdown isolation time, when we all moved into ourselves, into this place of being alone more and more of the time, and it is still a practice to move actively out of that, into community, into relationships, into being together. We have come to some clarity about the fact that we really do need each other, that we need one another in relationships, in communities, but the question always comes back to how. How do we do that? How do we put that into practice? What does it look like to be in relationships with one another that are loving and kind and supportive and caring? How do we do that? This morning we started off with love will guide us, right? We name love as a central part of who we are and what we are about. We talk about love is the spirit of this church. For years, we have asked the question, where is love calling us next? We talk about the universalist spirit of love and hope. We talk about our goal of building beloved community here in this congregation. So it matters what the word love means to us. For many Unitarian Universalists, they've found their way back maybe into spirituality and religion by taking the word God out and putting the word love in, right? So what does this mean for us? You know, if you know me, that I am always turning to bell hooks for this answer and definition. Bell Hooks, the author and theorist, educator, social critic, she is known for her writings on race and feminism and class. And it's her writings on love that ground me and us, I think, in our theology as well. She puts it pretty bluntly. She tells us that our idea as Americans of what love means is just frankly all wrong, totally wrong, way off base. She says we are taught that love is a feeling, something we don't have any control over, something that just happens. And something that when we experience it requires us to bear all things, forgive all things. But she asks, what if we stop using the word love as a noun and instead use it as a verb, an action verb, love as a verb? And she does all of this important sorting through different theories and definitions of love, and she lands on one in particular. It's M. Scott Peck's definition of love, and it goes like this. Love is the will to extend oneself for one's own or another's spiritual growth. Love is the will to extend oneself for one's own or another's spiritual growth. She goes on to say, love is as love does. Love is an act of will. It's both an intention and an action. We have choice. We choose to love. We do not have to do it. She says when we are truly loving, we are mixing together all kinds of things. Care, respect, recognition, attention, affection, trust, open and honest communication. When we understand love as the will to nurture our own and another's spiritual growth, she says, it becomes clear that we cannot claim to love if we are hurtful or abusive. Now, I can imagine that many of us have heard the more commonly talked about interpretation of those biblical verses of 1 Corinthians, right? The ones that are so often shared at weddings, the ones that say the love is patient, love is kind, love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. Love doesn't insist on its own way. It's not irritable. It keeps no record of wrongs. I tell you, I listen to this, I'm like, oh, this, I don't know about you, but I get irritable. I do these things. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. These words are beautiful and inspiring. And like all words, they can be manipulated to support or to cause harm. And in this case, they can sometimes be weaponized to teach us that love requires us to bear all things and endure all things and forgive all things, when that is not what is going to help us subvert patriarchy and racism and oppression sometimes. And I think it's important to know, too, that these words are so often taken out of context. They were never meant to be the foundation of love between two people in an intimate relationship. These instructions on love were about how to build a church, about how to build a community grounded in love. Not just about two people, but a community. So if we go back to that reading we heard this morning by Tess Baumberger, imagining what if bell hooks wrote 1 Corinthians instead. There were so many lines in there that might have caught your attention. Love is ethical, accountable, and responsible. Love is not hurtful or abusive or neglectful. Though it is satisfying to love, love is not about getting one's needs met, nor solely about meeting others' needs. True love is made of mutuality. I hear that line, and I can't help but think love clearly happens in relationships then. If true love is about mutuality, then it is not something we can do all on our own. Love places another's interests on the same footing as our own. Love is not so much a feeling as an action, a continuing active choice to nurture another's well-being. It matters what definition of love we use with one another. What is at the foundation of our faith, our principles, our practices, here in this congregation and out there in our lives? The purpose of church is to transform ourselves as individuals and to transform the world in ways of love and justice. How we define what love is matters tremendously. Now, I had a friend once who used to get in a lot of trouble at work and in relationships. This attempt to live these principles she experienced out in the world. And one of the things, after we talked, we discovered that one of the reasons she would get in so much trouble at work or in other relationships was that she would often start a conversation like this. Let me tell you something about yourself that you don't know about yourself. It didn't go well, as you can imagine. So let me tell you something about yourself that I hope you know about yourself, which is this is a place that embodies love. This is a congregation that doesn't just talk about love as the spirit of this church, doesn't just say the words, but actually tries to live it. We make mistakes, absolutely, but we try and try again. And we are in the practice of figuring out what it is to take the word love and turn it into the practice of love. I'll tell you, I have seen it here in so many ways. A very fun one is this morning. You know, I don't know if you know that the senior high group was here overnight last night. Snaps to them and to their advisors and everybody who was here with them. And they thought they would bring a little joy to the lives of the worship leaders this morning by filling the back room that we get ready in with blown up balloons and inflated condoms. So, right on. They are living love by being here and enjoying themselves and trying to make us smile, right? It's living into the practice of love. I think about last week we had our whole lives sexuality education kind of service, and we heard from our staff and volunteers and from students in those classes talking about creating an environment where they could know that they are all beloved, where they could learn true and accurate information about the wide range of gender expression and sexual orientation, where they could get life-saving information. And we talked about all of the volunteers that make that happen, creating spaces for our youth and adults to learn and grow together. We've heard over the course of these testimonials over the last few weeks about the ways that folks are trying to bring their Unitarian Universalist values into practice in all aspects of their life. The ways we do this together, supporting one another here to go live not only in these walls, but outside of these walls with love at the heart of it all. Now, love has been at the heart of congregational life for years. We heard that with the reading from 1 Corinthians, but I'll also take it forward a little bit. Come with me to the mid-1800s. I swear it won't be boring. We'll be there for just a moment to the time of the Transcendentalists, Unitarians, many of them, who are looking to reform religion because it had become stale and dry and not alive in people's lives. Their thinking, their actions, inform the development of this church back in 1859. So let me take you to James Freeman Clark, a Unitarian minister and Transcendentalist, And he named that the true purpose of church is to be the seat of both personal and social transformation. Both and, right? Personal and social transformation. But this could only happen, he taught, if church became a place of practice, a place where we came to this ever-evolving set of teachings and then worked together on how to live them out in our lives, what that would look like. I think about that with us, and I think, what would it be like if the discipline of love was our practice, our personal and our shared communal practice? For James Freeman Clark, back in 1841, when he started a new kind of church, trying to reform where we were in society, 1841, he decided to form a church called the Church of the Disciples. And it was about each and every person being equal and worthy, each and every person bringing what they could to the congregation in this communal's quest for social and personal transformation. He was the first one to bring, get this, congregational singing to church. Prior to that, it had been one person or not the congregation making the music. He wanted everyone to be involved, each in their own way, not only in sharing economic resources, but in singing, in creating worship together, in planning, in leadership in the congregation. He wanted joy and common effort in ministry. I see that here all the time. I see that in the leadership of our board, our stewardship team, our care companions, our religious education teachers, small group leaders, so many of us putting our love into practice. This is a love-centered church. So what can it look like when love is at the center of our practice? This isn't a one-time thing that I'm talking about. Many of you know my daughter has become quite a hockey player, very devoted to it. She's 13, and I listen in on the practices and the games all the time. And one of my favorite lines that I hear from the coaches is, "You don't have to get ready if you stay ready." I think about this in the ways of love, in the practice of love. And I've found myself saying in my head, the ready is relationships. The ready is being in relationships. It's being in community with one another. It's putting ourselves in places where we practice again and again. It's sitting next to one another and drinking coffee. It's singing and being with each other here in church or online. It's being in small groups or in committee meetings or at community dinners or at the Capitol together. You don't have to get ready if you stay ready. So here we are, here in this place and this moment in the world, and we are imagining what can love look like in practice. What can love look like in practice? It's different for each of us, depending on where we are in this moment in our lives. But it is this willingness to extend ourselves, to nurture our own and one another's spiritual growth. It's not just standing back and watching, it's extending ourselves. I go back to the teachings of Adrian Marie Brown all the time. She talks about how we can turn our culture, how we can turn our hearts, how we can turn systems. And she says this, in this moment, we need to flood the entire system with life-affirming principles and practices. We need to flood the entire system with life-affirming principles and practices to clear the channels between us of the toxicity of supremacy, to heal from the harms of a legacy of devaluing some lives and needs in order to indulge in others. I love this image. How do we flood the system? Whether it's our own lives, our families, our workplaces, our congregation, how do we flood them with life-affirming principles and practices? For me lately, I am finding myself doubling down on my spiritual practice, doubling down on my relationships and nurturing those to be a part of this web where I know myself beloved, where I know that I am a part of a love that will not let me go or let me off the hook. I'm sharing more of my financial resources and my time where and when I can. I'm committing to listening and learning, especially in situations where I am not the expert, where I can learn from someone whose life is impacted by a situation more than my own. There's no escape from this practice that is calling to us to live a life of love. It has to be us. As the poet Aurora Levens Morales said, it will have to be us. It will have to be all of us. All of us cupping our hands around each heart, we will sing the earth's song, the song of water, a song so beautiful that vengeance will turn to weeping, the mourners will embrace, and grief will replace every impulse toward harm. 10,000 is not enough. So we've sent this dream, she says, this dream like a flock of doves into the sleep of the world, asking us to wake up, put on our shoes. She is bringing bandages and a bag of scented guavas. Can we hear the tune? Let's meet at the corner. Let's go. May it be so. Amen. Sing together. Though I may speak with bravest fire.
Please rise and embody your spirit.
Please continue our time together here in the building if you're here. Join us for a place to start. If you are new or curious about this congregation, come right up. Join us for cake and coffee and conversation down in the social hall. Pick up your pledge packet on your way out. Let's listen for that tune of love together. Let's listen for its call in and on our lives. And let us put it into practice. Together. Amen.
Thanks for listening. If you've been comforted or inspired by this podcast, please consider supporting our ministry. Podcasts are free to download, but they cost money to make. Visit firstuniversalistchurch.org/donate to make your gift. We'd love for you to join us in person or online on Sunday mornings. To learn more, visit us online at firstuniversalistchurch.org.